Welcome to the On the Pursuit podcast, where we connect with entrepreneurs, movers, shakers, and business owners who've built amazing things on the pursuit of their goals and dreams. And I'm your host, Brendan Boyd.
What's up, y'all? Welcome to another episode of the On the Pursuit podcast. We interview 6, 7, 8-figure earners, right? We try to learn a little something from them. What are some things that work well? What are some of the struggles that they had on their way to their success? And on today's episode, I got someone, I feel like we know each other for a little bit now. It's not officially,
yeah,
but I mean, you know, Sean Finnegan connected us, and, you know, this guy is a founder of Guestio, entrepreneur, definitely someone that inspires me. Travis, welcome to the podcast.
Appreciate it, bro.
Yeah, 100%.
Thanks for having me, man. Yeah. Thanks for coming out to Vegas to make it happen.
Yeah, bro, I had to, man, I had to. Now, what's cool, something I kind of want to just put out there, I think it's important to make investments, you know what I'm saying? And one of the first investments that I made in you was you had that accelerator over the over the fall, right? So it was important to me, right? Because when there's someone that maybe inspires you or has access to some information that you know that you want to learn, or maybe you just want to be in proximity, you know, paying to get that access or paying for a program or paying for, let's say, even a mentorship is worth that investment, right?
Absolutely.
You know, playing that seed, you know, one can say that was a longer trajectory of having us here.
Absolutely.
You know,
for sure.
And I would make that investment anytime. So let's just start there. Like, what are some of the investments that you made to kind of help with your personal development and help grow your business?
Yeah, I love this conversation, dude, because it's one that needs to happen. You know, people tend to ask other people online all the time stuff about, you know, where should I put money? And I have X amount of, you know, dollars in my savings account. Where should I go invest? What should I put it in? And most of the time, especially if you, and I assume, you know, the audience watching this or listening to this wants to build wealth. They want they want something a little greater than ordinary, right? So if you're starting from that point, then the number one investment is you, because it always returns. You know, like you, if you invest in yourself, your knowledge, your connections, competency, skill set, growth, it's always going to come back in a much bigger way than the investment that you made. Even if the investment itself doesn't work out the way that you wanted it to work out, meaning like if I go out and hire a coach and I drop whatever, 10, 20, 40, 50 grand on a coach and it didn't work for the exact problem I wanted it to work for, if you are committed to the journey and you like zoom out and stop looking at it from a 3-month perspective and look at it from a like 10, 15 year perspective, you're gonna see that almost every investment that you make into you, really every one of them, is going to benefit you more than the money that you put into it, even if it's simply just due to the fact that it's another deposit in your belief in you. Because every time you take money from your hard-earned money that's in your account and you take that and you put it into you, it's another like deposit into your belief. It's another deposit into like, because you wouldn't be investing if you didn't believe that you can do something with the investment.
Facts, yeah.
Right? You wouldn't trust, you know, like you have to trust the coach, but you also have to trust yourself to do the work that the coach tells you to do to be able to earn them enough money to pay off yourself for the investment or make it more money. Mm. Like every time I put money into myself, man, like I said, even if I don't use the program or the program sucked or it just didn't work the way I wanted it to work, it always comes back to me in some way, even if it's just another notch in my confidence. So first off, let me just say that. And then, just try to make it more of a habit to invest in yourself instead of a decision every time. For me specifically, there was a few things that when I was first jumping in that I invested in, mostly masterminds, because like I was always trying to get more connected to people. My show originally was called Build Your Network. It was all about networking, building relationships and all that kind of stuff. And so I wanted just to go get connected to more people. I had a podcast that I wanted to interview more people on. And so it was less to me about like one-on-one coaching, even though I did hire a one-on-one podcast coach. I've invested a lot more in masterminds, just getting to know, you know, some of the most well-connected people in my space so that I could also be one of those well-connected people.
Yeah.
I think we did the math recently for some post or content thing that we did. I think we're close to or over $400,000 in the last 5 years alone that I've invested into masterminds, coaches, events, travel, you know, all that stuff just to improve me, which if you compare it to anything else I've invested in, it's a lot more than I've put into anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, and I don't know. I believe that it's long-term going to pay off. Because like I said, if you want to build something extraordinary, then you have to be willing to do, you have to be willing to take actions that are by definition not ordinary actions.
Yeah.
Or you're never going to get extraordinary results, right? So to me, it just made sense because it was always a stretch to like reach up and make the next big investment. And it never like felt safe and comfortable.
Really?
But it was just one of those things where I was just like, you know what? If at some point in the future, I want to look at this amount of money, whatever the investment is. So like, I'll use the 100 million mastermind that I'm in because it was a huge stretch for me when I jumped in.
Was that the biggest one?
Yeah, it was 100K for just the mastermind, for a year in the mastermind. And it was a massive jump for me. It was a huge investment. And I just remember thinking like, right now I'm looking at 100K like it's a lot of money. But in the future, I don't want to look at 100K like it's a lot of money. Yeah. I want to look at it like it's 10K, the way that I look at right now, right? And if I'm ever going to get to that point, then I should probably go get around a bunch of people who look at 100K as not a lot of money. You know what I mean? So, and I figured that mastermind's probably full of those types of people. And there's probably a few people, like few crazy people like me that are in there that probably like shouldn't be in there quite yet,
mm-hmm.
that are like making the bold jump to try to hang in a room like that. And so I figured like, look, I'll probably be one of the dumbest people in this room, but that's the room I want to be in. So still just dropped the 100K. It ended up going pretty well, well enough to do it for a second year and drop another 100K to be in the group. So, you know, things worked out pretty well. And now,
so the renewal was another 100K.
It was another 100K.
Yeah.
So just that one group was 200K alone, you know, for a couple of years. But the connections that I've gotten in that room, the people that I've hung out with, the money that I've made directly and indirectly with people that I met there or people that I did business with as a result of knowing somebody there is greater than the investment that I put into it. And we're only a year removed from making that investment. You know what I mean?
So you're a whole different person.
Yeah. You fast forward 5 years from now, what do all those connections equate to?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like I'm looking at partnering with this person right now who I met through that group on this new business that could potentially be worth, you know, a multiple of anything I've ever done before. You know, so, and I have no idea if anything will ever come of that. But my point is like, you fast forward and give yourself enough time, the relationships that you build, the knowledge you gain, the competency that you create can so easily pay off each one of those investments in such a, like a exponential way that it just doesn't make sense to not constantly be investing in yourself in some way.
Yeah.
What's up, y'all? So I want to take a second to speak to my creators. So whether you currently got a podcast or think about launching a podcast, maybe you got a YouTube channel or you think about launching a YouTube channel, here are the facts. Did you know that 9 out of 10 creators actually quit because they don't have anyone to hold them accountable? That's why all you need to do, right? Click that link below, join my Action Takers community, because not only are we gonna hold you accountable, we're gonna teach you how to execute at a higher level. Plus, give you access to principles and strategies to grow your mindset and generate more revenue. So what are you waiting for? Click that link below and join one of the fastest growing content and accountability communities. All right, I see you on the inside.
So someone that's probably listening to you right now is like, man, my man just spent 200K on a group.
Yeah.
Right? On a group, on a mastermind.
And by the way, if you can't see my car outside, I drive a Camry. So I've spent almost $500,000 in me in the last few years.
Yeah.
And I still drive a Camry.
Yeah, the Camry's protecting the value.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's just like,
so
people's priorities are messed up.
It's like, what are some of the things that you would say, if you would say like maybe three things that you've gotten from, let's say, being in that mastermind specifically, right? Because I want people that are listening or watching to kind of understand like what are some of the life-changing things. So what are some of the things that influence you that stand out. Obviously, there's probably so many, plus the people.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you could probably put it like a couple of pages full of information, but what's like one, two or three things that really impacted you?
The very first thing is definitely the people, the connections. It's like in that mastermind in particular, it's like all the other people who run mastermind groups
are in that group.
Yeah. So like all the top people who I used to look at as like, oh my gosh, you know, and I had, you know, intentionally and luckily connected with most of them because I was a podcaster, which is a hack.
Chico, for real.
So like I had already interviewed a bunch of them and stuff, and I had a relationship, but it was a different type of relationship because like when I joined that group, they started looking at me more like, oh shit, Travis is here. You know, I didn't think that he could jump into a group like this type of a thing. So like they started helping me up and sending me deals and doing more business with me, or at least like perceiving me to be somebody of value in the network rather than just like a young kid that we're rooting for, right? Like there's this different.
He found something out. I'm gonna just pay.
you know
what I'm saying?
Right. So the connections, relationships is absolutely the number one thing. Secondarily, I would say, it really puts my problems into perspective and makes me think much bigger than I tend to think, which I already feel like I tend to think bigger than most people. But when you get into a room like that, you can't help but have your mind stretched. Mm. You know, like I was sitting there thinking I was doing, you know, pretty good. I think I had like a $200,000 month that month, and I was sitting around this table and we're all talking about like we're in one of those little breakout session rooms, you know what I mean? And I was talking about, you know, a problem that we were coming up against, and like I said, feeling pretty good that we were like, you know, 200K a month. That's not bad.
Yeah.
You know?
That was great.
And this guy next to me is his turn, and he goes, yeah, we're doing we did 32 million last year, and we're really trying to push for 40 million this year. And so he's talking about like how they're acquiring like 2,000 customers a day, and they have this much money they're spending in ads, and this much money they have these, you know, 36 employees that are doing this thing over here, and like all these other problems. And I was just like, okay, well, you know, there goes my 200K month. Like, you know, I was patting myself on the back still, and then I just turned into one of those awkward head scratches. You know what I mean? So this guy's talking about his $30-40 million business. Guy next to him goes, and they're like, yeah, we're running into this plateau because we hit $200 million last year, and we're really trying to grow to become like the big, you know, monolith in this space and get to that $1 billion mark. And I was like, okay, what am I doing here?
You like,
what
I table, man? You have the right table, sure.
So like, it was just one of those moments where I was just like, my problems are teeny tiny. Stop whining about it. Do something about it. Figure it out. Move forward, just like everybody else in this room did.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And then. Again, coming back to the relationships piece, is that it's cool that night while we're hanging out at the bar or the club or whatever, like I get to talk to those people and you know, now a lot of them are good friends of mine. And the cool thing too is that I've created a unique value proposition for myself in the space because I have a skill set that is complementary to a lot of their skill sets, because none of them have dove into like personal branding, podcasting, creating content and stuff as much as I have in the last 5 years. So even though I make significantly less money than a lot of the other people in my group and in that room, I still have a lot of external value to provide because of the connections that I built to the podcast, the knowledge and everything that I've created in this space that still comes in and they go like, I don't understand anything about what you do. Can you help us, you know, do this? So it was a huge lesson in, first of all, again, the importance of connections, but also, making myself just think bigger and dream bigger, allow myself to stretch my mind and where I'm headed, and then also get help from those people to, you know, move along in that direction.
So you said the people, obviously being able to stretch, and what was the last thing?
I didn't give three. That was the two that two were off the top of my head. I would say the if I'm going to go with a third thing. I would say
anything you didn't expect.
I mean, there's a few things that I didn't expect, but I would say one of the things that I've really taken away that was more impactful was, really about your market, like picking your market, better, and this like more, a little bit more tactical on the business side, but everybody in the room that's doing tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars is in a much like bigger market than I'm in, which isn't necessarily like a bad thing at the moment because I'm still, I feel like, you know, cutting my teeth and grinding through some stuff and learning some things. But it definitely taught me more about like, how do I want to structure my life and where do I want to be in 10 years from now? Because if you spend, you know, 30 years trying to solve a $1 million problem and you solve it, it's like, did you really win? Mm-hmm. You could have spent 5 years trying to solve a $500 million problem. And if you solve that, you know what I mean? Like, it got me thinking a little bit more about like, how can I learn these business tactics that I can take and apply to a broader, you know, bigger, higher potential business and make it a little bit easier on myself. So there's a few things.
What do you think the importance of like moving faster when you're actually applying some information? So obviously like you're in the groups, you know, you're learning from people, you're in proximity, right? You're picking up stuff intentionally, maybe externally. And then obviously, you know, on your own personal development, your own journey in your business, right? What is the importance of like moving fast and that fast application when you're working towards success?
It's a big dichotomy because I think both, like you have to have urgency, but you also have to have patience. So, you know, people who tend to be competitive, I'm a pretty competitive person, you tend to want to move really, really fast. But if you allow yourself to get into that mindset, then you're going to probably be really disappointed with your results. Mm. If that is your mindset when it comes to the speed part. However, you can't have so much patience that you just never do anything. You know, because that's the other side of the same coin. Because a lot of, I would say more people are in that boat where they over-prepare. They read 48 books on a topic before they actually go try to do something with that topic, you know, and I think that's detrimental. I think, you know, success loves speed. So, you know, money loves momentum is what I used to tell people when I was selling a bunch. Success loves speed, money loves momentum. So the more you can do in a shorter period of time, you know, everything picks up better at that point. If you have that baseline, which is why I led with that with this answer, if you have the baseline understanding that it's going to take a long time, now you can get to work really, really fast. Mm-hmm. Because you can do way more reps in a shorter period of time, which helps you learn faster and compress the learning curve. But at the same time, even if you master, quote unquote, master to a certain level of competency, the skill set of selling, like that's not going to take you 3 months. Mm-hmm. It's going to take you a lot longer than 3 months. Yeah. And then once you have that one down, that's not the only thing that it takes to run a successful business or scale to the level that you're talking about. If you want to scale past 8 figures, you don't just need to learn how to sell. Like you have to learn how to recruit people, manage teams. You have to learn how to build systems. You have to learn how to market. You have to learn finance. You have to learn operations. There's like 6-7 different arms of having a successful business. That's only one of them. And that skill set by itself is going to take a long time to learn. So like if you don't have any urgency, if you don't have any speed and you're putting in a lower level of reps, you're just going to lose to the people that are putting in more reps. It's just a fact, you know, like it's just how it works. If you're only, you know, even if it comes to podcasting, if you're only doing one interview a week, you know, then like that's still 50 interviews a year. That's still pretty good. But if you do 3 interviews a week, that's 150 interviews a year.
Yeah.
You look at that over, you know, 5 years. Now that's what? 750 interviews versus 250 interviews over 5 years, right? Yeah. So like that's a big difference.
That's a big difference, yeah.
That's a big difference in the number of people you're talking to, probably the quality of the people that you're talking to, the number of episodes you put out, the number of downloads that you have, your potential for sponsorship income, your potential to make more money on your show, and your skill set as an interviewer. Your skill set as an interviewer is going to increase dramatically if you do 3 interviews a week rather than 1 interview a week, not just because of the volume, but because of the compressed time in between the time that you're working on the skill set. So like if you're doing 4 interviews a month, you can knock them all out in an afternoon. Mm-hmm. If you're doing 12 interviews a month, you might have to do it multiple times a month. So there's more opportunities to learn how to do it better the more often that you're doing it. It just makes sense. And so if you're doing sales, you know, and you're doing whatever, 30 outbound calls a day versus 200 outbound calls a day, you're just not going to be as good as fast. So you have to move with speed and you have to put in more reps in a compressed period of time if you want better results faster. However, if you do those things and then expect that everything's going to come in and flood in terms of like the results, just like that, it's probably not going to work that way because it's a long game. And I love what Gary Vee always says, which is everybody overestimates what they can do in 1 year and underestimates what they can do in 10 years. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the thing is that that's why I asked you at the beginning who your audience was. Cause if you're listening to this or watching this and it's your goal to create extraordinary results in life, something bigger and better, like you want to create real wealth for you and for your family, then, it's a commitment. It's a lifelong commitment. Don't just think like, I'm going to jump in this game for 3 or 4 years. And then if it doesn't work out, I'm going to go get a job.
Yeah.
Because you're just going to get a job. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a job. It might not even be in 3 or 4 years. You might just go through the pain of your first employee quitting when you're 7 months in and just be like, fuck it. Going back to CVS or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like yeah. you're going to quit. You have to be in it for the long game and you have to have the patience to understand that like, look, I don't know when exactly I'm going to get wealthy. Like my goal is by this date and this is how much, like I'm all about goals. I'm not saying not to do that. I'm just saying that like along the way, there's going to be setbacks. There's going to be obstacles. There's going to be things that you're not looking at right now that are going to prevent you from potentially getting to where you want to go as fast as you want to get there. But if you're committed to the long term, then none of that matters. Mm. It's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of time. Like, it's just like, I don't know exactly when it's going to happen. I just know that it's going to happen because I'm not going to give up.
Yeah.
And it, like, at some point, it's going to click. Like, yeah. If you swing the bat enough times, eventually you're going to hit a home run. But if you step away from the plate, I guarantee you're not going to.
Nothing.
You know?
Yeah. I actually like that, what you said. It reminds me of, like, something that Kobe used to say. Like, he had this famous interview. I think he even did it. I think it might have been with Patrick McDavid. We talked about how he structured his day, right? Where when he was training and working out, you know, he said like the average NBA player would, you know, they would train maybe once a day, mm-hmm. twice a day, mm-hmm. you know, and he kind of went through the day. But he's like, yo, if I get up at 2, you know, and I start training at 4, and then I'm back at it again at like, you know, 8 or something, yeah. then I'm back at it again at 12, then I'm back at it again at 4, yep. I got 4 workouts in 1 day. Over a 5-year period, none of these players is going to even be close to the amount of work I put in. Yeah. And I think that's a really good perspective, right? Because you're flipping like what the metric is. Metric's not necessarily, you know, I'm going to make, you know, 10K this month, right? Or I'm going to close this deal and make whatever. The metric is like the opportunities. Mm-hmm. It's the reps. So if that becomes what the goal is to get, you know, this amount of shots up or this amount of calls in, this amount of, you know, follow-ups, mm-hmm. you know, or even, you know, delegate some of the information so you can double, you know. Yeah. So let's say you and I were on the same team and, you know, I was doing 21 calls with the amount of time I had. Now we can do 42 calls or whatever the case may be. But I really, really like that because if you really think about it now, it almost becomes easier for someone to know, okay, all I need to do is get 21 calls done today. I don't have to worry about closing one deal or two deals. Mm-hmm. It's gonna release the pressure.
Absolutely.
And then by virtue of you doing the activity, like you said, right, even with using podcasts as an example, you know, doing more interviews, you're going to get better as a speaker. So you're going to get better as someone on the phone. Mm-hmm. You're going to pick up some nuances, some inflections, some tonalities. You're going to know what the FAQs are because mm-hmm. you're getting them in real time.
Yep.
You can jot them all down. You can have them on your computer,
yep.
you know what I'm saying, or your notebook or whatever. And then as soon as they come, like, you can handle them. You can probably even handle them before they even bring them up.
Yep.
So you start sharpening your knife, and the craft almost becomes fun now.
Yeah.
Like, Alex Ramosi always talks about, like, some of the objections that he faced, and he almost makes it some, you know, it's like gamified mm-hmm. in a sense, right? And it's like, oh, you said that? Oh, okay. Well, you know, with the money, oh, it's no problem. Mm-hmm. Like, if you really want this, then money's the last thing. We can figure out how to, you know, take care of that. So it's like you really just, like, diffuse everything.
Yeah.
And I think that happens when you take the reps.
You got to put in the reps,
you got to put in the work.
Jim, I don't know if you ever listened to any Jim Rohn trainings, but like some of his stuff is just, it's so golden because it's
timeless.
Yeah, it's timeless. Yeah. It's, you know, it never stops being relevant. And when I was doing a bunch of door-to-door sales back in the day, I listened to a lot of his stuff. And that was the first time I ever heard somebody talk about the law of averages. And it's just a fact. Like you said, you don't have to worry about making the sale. You have to worry about taking the action that leads to the sale.
Yeah.
And then if you know that it takes you X number of calls typically, or X number of doors knocked on, or X number of insert activity here to get insert results here, then all you have to do every day is do the action that you know is going to get the result. Mm-hmm. And you might go 3 days without a deal. But day four, you're probably going to get four deals.
Which is be wild.
You know what I'm
You'd
saying?
You'd be like, yo, I just did 80K in a day. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Exactly. It's just a lot of people won't stick through the pain.
Yeah.
Those painful days when you do walk away with a goose egg, even though you did knock doors for 6 hours,
yeah,
or you did do 200 dials and you didn't get anything out of it, and you walk away feeling dejected. And it's just a lot of people can't deal with that. You know what I mean?
But yeah.
You got to come in the next day with the same enthusiasm you had the day before and do it again. And if you walk away with a goose egg again, you got to come in the next day and you got to do it again.
Yeah.
And then now, like, until you make, like, once you've done your first, like, 10 deals, now you have a number. You know that I did X number of calls to have X number of conversations to sell X number of deals. Well, then all you have to do is put in the action to reverse engineer what does it take to get me to get one deal?
Mm-hmm.
And then what I used to train my sales reps to do when we were on doors is just like every door, just count how much money you made at that door. So instead of saying like, oh, I closed a deal, I made $1,000 or whatever, it's, oh, I knocked on a door, I made $24 on that door.
Mm.
Because you know your averages, right? So like, you know.
So you're always winning.
Yeah, you know, like even when you're losing, you're winning because you know, like every door you knock on, like $24. $24.
Yeah.
It was a no answer.
If they take it, it's a bonus.
Yeah. It's like a no show. I made $24. Because I know at the end of the day, if I look at my past month, the law of averages is going to be true to some extent, plus or minus maybe a couple percentage, you know, a couple points. Like it's not going to be that crazy. And then, as you said, you're going to get better and better and better over time. And then those numbers start looking a lot better. And all of a sudden, it doesn't take you 100 doors to get a deal. It takes you 12 doors to get a deal. You know what I mean? It's there's a lot of pain that happens in that in between, and a lot of people can't stand the pain. But yeah, the law of averages thing, man. If you never listen to Jim Rohn, if you're listening to this right now, you should. I think some of them are just like on Spotify and Apple Music
now.
It's
YouTube
like free. Yeah.
Yeah, facts.
Yeah, just go check out some of Jim Rohn's stuff, because that stuff is, like I said, it is timeless and it's very good.
What's up, y'all? It's Brendan Boyd, speaker, productivity coach, and host of the On the Pursuit podcast. And I want to talk to you all about my brand new book, The 8 Secrets to Success Playbook. Now, this playbook is jam-packed with all sorts of value. So if you're a coach or a consultant or an expert and you're looking to 5X or even 10X your business, you definitely want to grab a copy of this playbook. I'm talking about conversions, lead generation, high ticket offer, continuity offer, the power of speaking, the power of making a book for yourself, promoting, advertising. It's all in this playbook. So you definitely want to make sure that you grab a copy. Click the link below, get a copy of your playbook, and I'll see you on the other side. So the version of you that's sitting with me right now, you know, confident, focused, you know what I mean? Business person, entrepreneur, you know, you dialed in on the stuff you're doing. How long did it take you to evolve to this person? Like, was it a pivotal moment where you was like, I'm going all in? Was it, you know, because you mentioned you used to, you know, knock doors. So like, you know, what was it, you know, in your past, or was it a moment where you was like, okay, cool, I'm locking in, I'm focusing, I'm pivoting to this, you know, to this direction. What did that look like for you?
The confidence, I think came with just putting in the reps again. You know, confidence is such a huge key to anybody that's successful. Like you have to have confidence, especially if you're doing anything that's like somewhat high ticket. You can't give off a spirit of, you know, being really timid. You gotta be confident that you can deliver for people, or at least do what you say you're gonna do. And so I try to work hard on building my confidence. And a couple of ways to do that is, number one is actually have the results, like put in the work and have the reps. And like I knew getting into the online world that my sales ability would save me from a lot of stupid mistakes and errors, because I knew that I had sharpened the ability to sell from 5 years of 100% commission door-to-door sales.
Mm-hmm.
So when I jumped in the online world, it was frankly much easier to sell, because I had people that were on the phone that were actually interested in what I had to buy already, you know, versus like knocking the door, just a random person's house. So it was actually much easier for me at that time. But I had that confidence coming into it because I knocked on thousands of doors. And you can't replace the confidence that you get from having competence in that arena. The second way that I build confidence, and probably the most effective way to build confidence, is just keeping the promises you make to yourself. Like, you have to have an impeccable word, and that starts with you.
Yeah.
Because if you don't trust yourself to do the things that you say that you're going to do, then that lack of confidence in you will bleed into other people. And they'll sense that you don't even trust you, and they'll pick up on that, and then they won't trust you.
Yeah.
So you got to keep the promises you make to yourself, and then you got to just put in the reps and have enough competence in that area. So I think once you start kind of like putting notches in the confidence belt or putting deposits in the confidence bank account, it's kind of a snowball effect that keeps rolling, because even when I was moving into podcasting, it had nothing to do with door-to-door sales or any of the stuff that I was doing at the time. It was still like, when I came into the world, I knew that I had also done this in two or three other different things, and I learned how to do those things, and I knew that if I put in the work, I was going to be able to learn how to do this too. There's nothing magical or mystical about any of the stuff that exists in the world right now in terms of what you can do. It's just a matter of, are you willing to put in the work to be able to make it happen? If the answer to that's yes, then you go ahead and you can make it happen. If the answer to that's no, then there's probably going to be something along the way that's going to, like we said earlier, if you're not fully committed from the beginning, something along the way is going to get you off track. Mm-hmm. Ed Milet always asks people, is your will to win for sale? And I like the way that he says that.
Is your will to win for sale?
Yeah, it's essentially like, how committed are you? Mm. Because if your will to win is literally not for sale, then that means that there is absolutely nothing, barring anything unethical, immoral, just illegal or whatever, there's absolutely nothing that you won't do in order to achieve the goal. So when the pain happens, you're just going to keep going. When a personal life issue pops up that you weren't expecting, you know, a loved one passes, or, you know, a relationship ends, a divorce happens, you know, there's a lot of difficulty that happens in life. And if your will to win is for sale, then you will give up when the going gets tough, when you're on that road. So if your will to win is not for sale, then regardless of all the stuff that's happening, you will still find a way to make it happen.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
So you have to decide if what you're pursuing is a worthy enough pursuit to not have your will to win to be for sale, which is why I'm in entrepreneurship, because for me personally, I don't think I'd ever be able to get behind somebody else's dream enough to push myself to not ever have to quit or not, you know, sell my will to win. Yeah. You know, if I'm pushing somebody else's thing, like, I just don't think I would have as much fire about it. I just don't think that personally. And I think that's mostly a personality thing. There's a lot of people that are that way, and thank God, or else I wouldn't have anybody that worked on my team.
Yeah, facts.
You know, so I just personally am not. So you got to ask yourself, am I will to win for sale? And do I care enough about being successful in this thing that I'm pursuing right now to make sure that it is not for sale? That if something did come up, if my partner screwed me, if I went bankrupt, if whatever, you know, think worst case scenario here, if that happened, would I continue to do this? And if the answer is no, then maybe take a second thought about where you're headed and what you're doing, and, you know, get a clarity checkup with you and see, like, is this still who I want to be? This is still the life that I want. Those obstacles are going to come up regardless of if you plan for them or don't plan for them, is my point.
Yeah.
So if you don't plan for them and you're not fully committed and your will to win's for sale, then you're going to give up. You're going to quit. And that's really the only metric that decides whether or not you win or lose, is if you quit.
I like that a lot, man. I think that puts a lot of things in perspective. And you know, that's an Ed Milet quote, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's so simple, but it's super effective when you really, like, you know, you say it, but you really look at it, right? And I think not quitting is a big testament to that. And then when you really, it's almost like if you take a piece of paper and you have, like, your pros and cons of, like, whatever the opportunity is, it's like, you know, would you be willing to quit if these things happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and hearing you say that, it's like, I'm kind of on, you know, not kind of, I'm on the same side that you're on, because I've been through, like, you know, me and my business partner breaking up, you know, deaths, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Deciding to, excuse me, not go out to certain things, moving, you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I fully understand that, and I hear that, and hopefully someone that's watching this or listening to this is like, that might be something that they need to hear. That's going to help them kind of stay on track, or just put, you know, what they're going through into, you know, better perspective, so they can just make a better decision.
Yeah.
You know, so let's talk about podcasting a little bit, man. So,
yeah, so
I feel like, you know, you are someone that has figured out something that I feel like a lot of people haven't figured out when it comes to podcasts, which I thought about this the other day, which is kind of interesting. It's like, I used to be in real estate, and I really like real estate because I saw it as an industry that was like so vast where you can do a deal like so many different ways. You can get paid so many different ways. And when, you know, now I'm in a podcast space, I look at it the same way. I feel like there's so many ways that you can get money in podcasting, but the average podcaster, you know, they're looking for brand deals, sponsorships, merch, and then, you know, hopefully getting some money on YouTube when it's like those are so far in front of you when you're just starting. Like if you start a podcast right now, those are not the ways that you can monetize fast, you know?
Yeah.
So what were some of the ways that like allowed you to just look at the industry a little bit different and then, you know, obviously be able to monetize in the manner in which you are?
Yeah, I think it was mostly an influence thing. Just the podcasters or people that I was kind of learning from, I saw that some of them did coaching or had groups or whatever, and it just seemed obvious to me that that was going to be an easier way to make money. It was like, I launched my show hoping to become the next Joe Rogan, just like everybody else does, you know. And I paid for a coach. I did it the right way. I was 15K in, maybe 20K in on my show before I launched it in terms of like coaching masterminds, equipment, website. Like I was doing it the right way. And I hit the top charts and I did everything that they told me to do. And my show did not explode the way that I thought it was going to explode. You know, it was like, oh, if you hit the top charts, everybody sees it and you get a bunch of listeners. It was like, that's awesome. And then it didn't happen. You know, it was like, I was on the top charts for a long time, but it just doesn't do for your show what people tell you that it does for your show. Or what you know, or really it's that it used to be that way. It was that when there was such a small number of podcasts out there, you know, Apple was still kind of the hub and people would discover a lot on the top charts and it used to work. But this was like before I started a show, and I started my show in 2017. So this was like 2012, 2013 when that was working. And so the people that were teaching me what worked in 2012, 2013 and didn't work in 2017.
Makes sense. Yeah.
And so when I got to that point, it was one of those setbacks where it was like, okay, well, do I want to keep doing this then? Because I did everything that they told me to do, and I got the result that they told me to get, which should have catapulted me to this level where I could start getting sponsorships, and it didn't.
Mm.
So now it's like I'm getting 300, 400, like literally probably 300 downloads an episode, when I thought I was going to be getting 5,000 downloads an episode if I did this thing and hit the top charts and did all the stuff I was supposed to, and none of that happened. So it was like a re-engagement of, again, my commitment. It was a question mark of like, okay, am I really committed to this thing? Because if not, if I am, now I have to figure out a completely brand new way of operating this that I did not think I was going to have to do. And turns out I was committed to figuring it out. I liked the idea of podcasting and I wanted to continue doing it. So I was just like, I committed to 2 years when I started. So when I launched, I was like, 2 years, 3 episodes a week. If nothing happens after that, then after 2 years, I'll give it a second thought and see if it's something that I should revisit. But obviously a bunch of stuff happened after 2 years of doing it. But most of it came in like the last 6 months of those 2 years. Yeah, so I was on edge for like 18 months, you know what I mean? But yeah, it was mainly just like the people that I was around were doing it that way. So I kind of looked at what they were doing. And I kind of fully engaged in to go from zero to six figures with my podcast was kind of like a fully engaged in the ask method, where it was very much build a tight-knit, small community of listeners. Again, I was 200 to 300 downloads an episode. Solve a big problem for them, which for me was networking. How do you get around good people? And then get on the phone, ask them what their problems are, right? Which is how I found out what the problems were. And then I built something that helped them solve that problem, which was my first version of a mastermind that I ever sold. So it was a very simple, to me, formula. You know, build a small engaged audience. At the time, bro, I was doing free one-on-one phone calls with anybody that would jump on a phone call with me. So I had calls to action, calls to action, my intro, my outro, my show.
Ooh, that's a lot of calls.
And I would do.
I'm assuming.
Yeah. Well, at the beginning, it wasn't many at all because nobody was fucking listening to my show. But when it started picking up, 200, 300, you know, so I was getting, when you have 200, 300 downloads an episode, you're probably getting legitimately like 24 people listening to an episode. You know what I mean? So like, but a few of those people started picking up on it and calls to action, front, like beginning and end. And my call to action was, if you want to jump on a call with me, go to my Facebook group And so my Facebook group would collect their email.
Yeah.
And then in the welcome post in the Facebook group was my Calendly link. So they could just schedule a call. So I probably did 100 plus free 15-minute, 20-minute phone calls with people. And I would ask them, first of all, just get to know them.
Yeah.
You know, just so I'd first, you know, where are you from type of a thing. Let them talk for a few minutes. Get to know them a little bit more. At the very end of the call, I would say, before I let you go, two questions for you. Number one, what's a problem that you're currently facing when it comes to X?
Yeah.
What's your topic? For me, it was networking, relationship building. What's a problem that you're currently facing when it comes to building good quality relationships? And then lastly, what's something that you would change about the show? You know, is there more or less content I should be doing about X, Y, Z? So I asked those questions on every call, and I kept track of all of the responses to those questions. And then the biggest problem people were facing when it came to networking was like having a place to meet like-minded people. So that's where I came up with my first mastermind idea. I think I sold 7 spots for like $1,000 a piece.
7K?
A 3-month mastermind or something.
7K off the podcast 7K? In the beginning?
7K
that's a good
with
number, man.
200 listeners an episode or something.
Yeah.
In a Facebook group, and I spent every dime that I made on that group back into the group. So, like, there was $1,000 for 3 months, and I bought $800 event tickets for everybody in the group to go to 10X GrowthCon with me in Vegas.
Mm.
But they all came out to Vegas. We hung out at my house. I brought in a speaker to our like small group mastermind. We went to the event. We got to know each other. We hung out. We drank. We built actual real relationships. And I still have a lot of relationships with people in that very first mastermind that I ever did. And I invested heavily back into the group. And then I launched the second version of the group. And then all of a sudden it was $500 a month for 6 months. Now it was $3,000 instead of $1,000. And I was actually making a little bit of money on it.
Mm.
And that was the first time that somebody somebody asked me about podcast coaching. And really where I started realizing that was going to be the majority of what my income was going to come from, because people were just willing to pay more for it. So, you know, the first podcast coaching client I ever took on was $1,500 for 8 weeks.
So people were willing to pay more for the podcast coaching at the time than just the mastermind. That's kind of what you were picking up on.
Correct. Yeah. More, like, it was going to be more for me because it didn't cost me as much money. All it cost me was my time to jump on the calls.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the coaching calls, you know, 8 weeks of coaching, $1,500. And within a year of bringing my first client on in that coaching, I was doing 12 weeks for $15,000 of one-on-one podcast coaching. And then I was running masterminds. And then I sold my first mastermind for $12,000, instead of, you know, $1,000 or $3,000. It was 6 months, $12,000. I sold it from stage at an event that I filled. So I paid $40,000, put on this big event for 100 people, brought in some great speakers, sold the mastermind from stage. And that was the first time I ever did. I think I did $200,000 that weekend.
Yeah.
And I was like,
in 2 days.
Oh, shit. Like, this is real. And this all stemmed from a teeny tiny 200 download an episode podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, people say, you know, podcasts don't make money. It's just like, no, your podcast doesn't make
money. Facts.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Let's talk about some ways that maybe you're not thinking about where it could be making sense.
That's why I said it's so vast.
Yeah.
You know, like, the way that you think about it, and some of the ways that you just showed right now, a lot of podcasters not even thinking that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've had so many calls with podcasters, and they all, again, it's always brand deal sponsorships.
Yep.
I want to do some merch.
Yep.
And, I'm going to get this money from Google AdSense, you know, obviously YouTube and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you're talking about
Patreon or something.
Patreon, right? You're talking about speaking from the stage. You're talking about masterminds. You're talking about coaching.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about investing back into that group. And then you're also talking about, you know, converting on a back end and you're making it easier for people to get in.
Yeah.
You're not saying, hey, it's a one pay $15,000, it's a one pay $3,000, you know, it's one pay $1,500. You're like, okay, no, we're going to break it up over mm-hmm. 6 months, 12 weeks, you know, whatever the case is to get you in there because I want to provide you with the value.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, you know, once I do that, it's going to allow, you know, you to do more and then just grow because that's where it's going to spread.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing that you're able to you know, to look at it from that lens. And obviously people that are listening and watching, like, hope you're picking up on that nuance, right? Small podcast, create an event, fill the event, hire some people to speak at the event, you know, then you present
your offer.
Actually,
better hack is I didn't pay a dime in speaker's fees.
Oh, amazing.
Because every speaker that spoke, I had on my podcast. So we already had a relationship.
Awesome.
So I was able to build a $100,000 speaker lineup for $0 because I built relationships with them because I had a podcast.
And that's the podcast play when it comes to building relationships is crazy.
It's the Trojan horse, bro.
100%.
As soon as you experience it, you like, as soon as I have a client that comes in and they experience it, they're like, dude, I don't even know. How do I go back to not having a podcast? Because it's the excuse. It, like I said, it's a Trojan horse to connect. Like people don't think of it in that way.
They don't
think of it as a connection tool. That's why it blows my mind when people have these solo podcasts.
Yeah.
It's like, if you have a solo podcast, you better be like Rob Dial, you know, like Rob Dial has a solo podcast, but he gets, you know, I don't know, he's probably gotten like 200 million downloads on his show, or like Omar Zenholm, my buddy, does the $100 MBA show. He's gotten 200 plus million downloads on his show. Like, those are solo shows. They release daily. They're a little bit different. Like, you better have a show that's doing that if you're not going to be interviewing people. Because I just think that you're leaving out so many benefits of podcasting.
And a relationship capital is crazy.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
that's what
I'm saying. I met my first millionaires because I had a podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah. I knew zero millionaires growing up.
Yeah, same.
And I started a podcast, and then it was all of a sudden like, I'm talking to Tillman Fertitta.
Yeah.
He's worth like $7 billion. You know, he owns the Houston Rockets. You know, I'm talking to Jeff Hoffman, who's the co-founder of Priceline.com, sold it for like $3 billion, and then went shopping for an NFL team. You know, it's just like, how is this happening right now? You know, how am I having these conversations? And a couple of those people, they reached out to me to interview them because they were promoting a book, you know? And those were the moments where it was just like, just because I have a podcast. And frankly, a lot of them at the time were just like, my podcast was not that big.
Yeah.
It was just that I was a good quality host. I asked thoughtful questions. I prepared. I did my job well. I was a professional.
Yeah.
And that was few and far between. So they hit me up and wanted me to do interviews with their people. You know, I didn't have a Lewis Howes size audience. You know, it was just, I had a good podcast that did a good job, and I was a strong host that gave a shit about my content and my audience.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it led to all of these different opportunities.
Yeah.
And now, you know, being able to have conversations with my childhood heroes and stuff like that, it's just, it's cool stuff. Some of it you can't measure in dollars. It's just like, I'm happy and proud of the fact that that is something that happened in my life, you know, and sometimes that's enough.
What's up, yo? If you're watching this right now, or you're a podcaster, right, and you want to monetize your podcast without brand deal sponsorships or a large audience, or maybe you just don't know how, my name is Brendan Boyd, and I can show you how to do that. Most people think you need a large audience, or you need sponsorships, or you need brand deals, but I'm telling you right now, you can make $5,000 to $10,000 every single month with your podcast without any of that stuff. All I need you to do is click the link below, grab my 100K podcast program completely for free, go through the course, and I'll learn the gems that can change your podcast and put you in the right position, all right? I see you on the inside.
Yeah, where do you think the industry is going with podcasting? You know, you got AI emerging. I mean, you know, advertisers spending like $500,000, you know what I'm saying, even more into the space right now. You know, YouTube just launched a podcast, you know, category on their platform. So a lot is happening right now. So
yeah.
So what do you think?
Yeah, I think it has a ton of room to expand and grow. There's like 40 something million YouTube channels. There's 4 million podcasts. And of the 4 million podcasts, I believe the last number I heard, there's less than 200,000 that are actually actively releasing episodes within the last 30 days.
Yes.
So there's still
a lot of room there.
And it's similar to YouTube in the fact that like it can continue to expand because you can have people become micro famous and still make a good living doing it. You don't have to have a Joe Rogan size audience to make a living having a podcast.
Yeah.
Now, it would be nice. it'd be nice to be clocking in, you know, seven, eight figure months sponsorship income.
Mm-hmm.
But can you do 4,000 a month?
Yeah, that's doable.
There's room.
Yeah.
You know, there's room. I tell this story all the time. I got to give a shout out to my buddy Harry. He's been a podcaster for a long time, has a company called Fullcast, and then his original show is called Podcast Junkies. So he's like, we'll just interview podcasters.
Yeah. I'm familiar with that.
Really good dude, a good friend of mine. And he started a podcast year and a half ago on vertical farming, which is an industry I didn't know existed. But apparently there's an entire industry about how to vertical farm. So because you got to build this whole ecosystem and you got to get...
Is that indoors?
Enough. I assume.
Okay.
I assume. Yeah, I really, honestly, I haven't even Googled it since we had the conversation. There's probably both. You probably do it indoors versus outdoors. Yeah. And then there's different setups that you have. But you got to get water to the plants. You got to get sunlight. So there's these ecosystems that are set up. And he started this podcast, and I don't know the numbers, but I can't imagine it does more than 500 downloads an episode because it's such a niche. And he's got two seasons of it. He was telling me he sold $70,000 in sponsorship packages on his first two seasons of that show alone.
That's crazy.
$70,000.
Yeah, that's crazy.
On vertical farming.
Yeah.
And then one of the owners of the companies that sponsored him flew him to Dubai for a week to be at the Vertical Farming World Conference.
That's
or whatever
crazy
the fuck
right
they have.
Yes.
And so he got to just walk around Dubai, and he's like, at the conference, it was so weird, man. It was like people came up to me, were like, call me by my name. Like he was literally a mini micro celebrity in the vertical farming world because nothing existed for those people in that space.
Makes sense. He
stepped in, made a shit, like that's a shit ton of sponsorship revenue for most shows, let alone a teeny tiny brand new vertical farming podcast with not a ton of history of listenership. So like he stepped in, created that 70K in spots, like no masterminds, no events, none of that stuff. You know what I mean? So
not yet, but that's just
sure.
To know what opportunity
he could. He could be putting on his own vertical farming event next year if he wanted to. You know, just depends on how far you want to go in that space. But the point is, that's why I think the industry is going to continue growing and continue evolving, because there's no theoretical limit to how many there can be.
Mm-hmm.
It does mean that you're going to have to get better. You know what I mean? Like Tom Billy, you told me when I had him on the show, because I was asking him about like why protein bars. It was such a convoluted competitive space, and he told me there's always room for the best. And it was like, that's very true. Steve Martin says, "Be so good they can't ignore you."
Mm-hmm.
Right? So yeah, some industries may be saturated. Yeah, there's a couple hundred thousand podcasts out there. Yeah, there's 40 million YouTube channels. Yeah, there's 500,000 books that come out every single year. There's 500,000 blogs. You know, there's 2 billion Instagram users, there's a couple billion Facebook users, 1.5 billion TikTok users, but it doesn't stop anybody from creating on any other platform. Everybody's still on, like, they're fully bought into social media, but for some reason, podcasting's the one where they come to and they're like, podcasting's saturated.
Yeah.
It's like, it is the literal least saturated of all of the other platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Your ass is still posting shit on Instagram, but you're talking about how podcasting's saturated.
Yeah.
There's 2 billion users over there. Like there's 200,000 active podcasts and there's 400 million listeners. Like there is a lot of room for you to start a podcast and grow a good sized audience enough to either make you money in your existing business, help you start a new business, or potentially earn enough listeners and attention to create sponsorship and affiliate revenue for yourself.
Yeah.
There's so much opportunity still in the space, and I think it's going to continue growing because of that. You're just going to have to be a little bit better. You know, you need to work on your content, you need to work on your craft, be better at your delivery, be better at your content, your scheduling. Can I release more episodes? Can I release better episodes? Can I interview better guests? How am I as an interviewer?
Mm-hmm.
Like you do need to constantly be getting better, because as the industry does get more and more and more and more and more creators in it, the competition is just going to get more stiff. So you're going to have to just be a little bit better than you were before. But all of that is good. You know, that's all good for the industry. All that's going to do is like the more that comes in, the higher quality these shows become. What does that do to the listener base? Starts expanding the listener base, where there's not 400 million people listening to podcasts in 10 years from now. There's 1.5 billion people listening to podcasts in 10 years from now. Is that a good thing for the podcasting industry overall? Absolutely.
100%.
It is. You know what I mean? It's just like, are you going to be good enough to be able to capture a little bit of that growth? You know what I mean? So the industry itself has a projected CAGR, which is a compound annual growth rate of like 9%.
Mm.
So it's expected by like 2028 to go from like $10 billion in ad dollars to $100 billion in industry size. Excuse me, not just ad dollars, in industry size. So the industry is exponentially growing still. I think it's a very interesting space because, especially with YouTube, highlighting podcasts now and now having specific like podcasting feeds, and you know, podcast descriptions.
Yeah,
they're already the number one podcast platform in the world. You know, if you look at audio only, it's Spotify. But if you look at just total consumption hours, it's YouTube.
Yeah, so wait till they get the RSS feed. I know they're gonna get that on there.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what they do with it. But just the fact that they're giving that much attention to it,
yeah, means they're paying attention.
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So so I think it's going to continue to get bigger and bigger. You're seeing a lot of like YouTubers that are starting podcasts now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people who've been historically 6-7 years just being a YouTube creator, doing their, you know, 8 to 12 minute little videos on finance or whatever,
yeah,
that are now like, ooh, I wonder if I could start a podcast. And then they're starting podcasts. And they're loving that mode from the people I've talked to. They're loving that medium better than they're liking sitting at home with their camera on, like talking to a camera. Because it's fun, it's engaging. Like the conversation we're having I'll pop over. It took me 15, 20 minutes to drive over here, but like this is a cool break in my day because I liked sitting here and having fun, interesting conversations with interesting people. And it is not, it doesn't feel like a drag. It doesn't feel like a thing I have to check off my to-do list and be like, oh, got to do a podcast interview today. You know, that sucks talking to cool people. You know what I mean? Like it's a fun thing. So I think it's going to continue expanding. I think not to be rude or gruesome here, but as the older generation kind of moves off the scene in terms of like in terms of being the main consumers, which millennials already are the main consumers, but as that happens more, like radio is going to continue dying, getting worse and worse and further down as a priority, and podcast is going to continue coming up and taking more of that market share. And then the very last thing, and the last thing I'll say about it, because I could ramble on this for hours. The last thing that I'll say is the most interesting thing to me about podcasting specifically compared to every other content platform is that it's the only one that still stands as the true long form consumption medium.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Every other platform, including YouTube, is optimizing for short form consumption because TikTok blew everybody's minds when they grew like crazy a few years ago on just the 30-second, I think it was 30 seconds at the time. Videos.
It might have been like 15.
It was short. It was really short.
Yeah.
So that vertical video, the swiping dopamine hit thing, like now you got TikTok and now you have Instagram and Facebook with
Pinterest
reels.
And
you
Pinterest
have
now.
Pinterest vertical video. Yeah. You have YouTube Shorts. Like everybody's optimizing for short form vertical video content because that's what's working.
Yeah.
Podcasting is like the last area where somebody's going to hit play on a 2-hour episode and listen to 75% of it.
Yeah, facts.
How long is it going to take for somebody in your Instagram audience to consume you for that long?
Yeah.
Like the answer is we don't know.
Yeah.
Because like
and when
we
you
can
post generally
back.
Like that post on YouTube, I mean Instagram, it might have a 2-day lifespan.
Yeah.
Maybe three.
And how many people are actually going to see the freaking thing, dude?
That is true.
Instagram throttles people. They're so algorithm based that if like they show your video to 10% of your audience and it doesn't immediately get traction, they just don't show it to anybody.
Yeah,
it's like, well, these people are my followers, right? Why not show them my stuff? You know, it's well because they're also following 12,000 other people on Instagram.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like podcasts is like they listen to 5 to 7. So if you get in that rotation and you become one of those people, then they're going to spend literally hours and hours and hours of their life with you on their commute, while they're working out, while they're mowing the lawn, doing the dishes, whatever it is that they're doing, they will be spending that time with you. Not, you know what I mean? You're building a real, you know, quote unquote relationship with your audience at that point. So even if it is your smallest audience, I would be willing to bet it's probably your most valuable.
All right, so what about the relationships thing, right? So I think what's interesting is that you had mentioned earlier, right? Once you start leveling up, like the guests, right? Obviously, you're going to build your relationships. People will probably think, well, how do I get like higher level guests? How do I get higher quality guests on the show? So what are some of the strategies that you use to get like some of your like most memorable guests on the show?
Well, first off, you can go to my app, Guestio.
That is true. Shout out to Guestio.
Right off the bat.
Yeah.
Because what I had to do at the beginning was just, it took a long time. It took, you know, several months of reaching out to a bunch of high level people, getting ignored, getting rejected, getting told no. And I finally got one or two people to say yes. And then once you get the first couple, it's easier to get the next couple. And then it's easier to get the next couple. And then it's easier to get the next couple. It just kind of compounds and grows on itself. But the first few are difficult to get, especially if you were like me and you're starting completely from scratch and didn't know anybody to begin
with. Which is like a lot of people. Like if they're just starting, a lot of people are right there.
Yep. So if you're in that boat, then you can go to Guestio, skip the line, and pay for a couple really good guests to make that snowball effect happen like that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have the budget for that, then it's just a matter of time and then kind of what we were talking about earlier, it's a matter of reps.
Yeah.
It's like, how many people are you going to reach out to? You know, because most people are like, ooh, it'd be cool to have that one person on my show. And they reach out to that one person and they get ignored.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, no. Create your list of 100 people, 200 people that you want to interview on your show. And by the way, especially if you're starting from scratch, they shouldn't all be A-list celebrities, right? Like, be realistic.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to start with The Rock to have interesting content and start working on your interview ability. Start, you know, my point is, like, when we coach people on, like, Dream 100, we're like, have segmented lists. Like, this is your dream list. Like, put as many A-listers on there, stretch your mind, believe it's possible, put Barack Obama and Shaq and put anybody else you want to put on that list. This is your dream list. Then have another list where it's like, this is my, like, you know, B-lister.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a B-lister.
These are like my industry celebrities, which for us would be in the business world, would be, you know, the Grant Cardones, people like that. Still difficult to get, but they're not
too rockable. Too high, yeah.
And then you have another list where it's like, I know these people will say yes. You know, like, this is my, like, a lot of the first guests on my show was like, oh, this is my buddy that's in network marketing. You know what I mean? This is my friend that runs a six-figure business. Mm. This is my friend, you know what I mean? Like, I knew a couple people doing six figures, you know, at the time. Like, if you post on Facebook, you'll probably get a couple people like that. There's plenty of those on Guestio for like $5. So there's no excuse not to start with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to start with a $2,000 guest on Guestio, but there's plenty of people for $5, $10 that are running six-figure businesses that can speak intelligently about blah, 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 blah. So,
yes.
So, you know, start with that. And then once you start getting people on, ask them for intros to other people that would be interesting.
Yeah, that's a cheat code.
Yeah. And then continue reaching out to the people that are on your hard to get and impossible to get lists, because one of these days, one of them is going to say yes. And like I said, all you need is one. Once you get like that anchor guest, like once I got Shaq on my show, it made it significantly easier for anybody less famous than Shaq to say yes to come on my show. It doesn't mean it's a guaranteed yes, but it makes it significantly easier.
Yeah.
Because it's an immediately recognizable name that everybody knows in the world.
They're like, oh, yeah, Shaq on? Okay.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Even if they're a famous business person, they're not Shaq. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they're still, like, Grant Cardone's really, really well known at this point. He's actually, to me, like, transcended the business world and has become actually, like, pretty famous. Like, him and Gary Vee, there's a couple people that have become, like, they're not just famous entrepreneurs,
they're
famous people.
Yeah.
Jay Shetty. There's a couple people that have done that effectively, but they're still not Shaq. You know, like, that's my grandma knows Shaq.
Yeah.
You know, your little cousin knows Shaq. Everybody knows who the guy is, no matter where you are, where you're from, what sport you liked or played, or if you didn't do it at all, you know who the guy is.
Mm-hmm.
So he became like that kind of anchor, that anchor guest. And so you always still want to be reaching out to people. Use Instagram DMs, use Twitter DMs, use Twitter feed, you know, LinkedIn, cold email, use whatever's at your disposal and, you know, go to events, try to meet people in person, shake their hand, look them in the eye. Like, you got to go meet people and put yourself in a position to succeed.
Was there any, like, one guest that you got in a very creative way that wasn't just, you know, any of the messages you just mentioned, anything that was just like, I'm going to reach out to this dude and have that connected over it. You know what I mean? Was anything kind of just
Grant was kind of that way. It was an Instagram DM that eventually got him on. But the first time I reached out, he ignored it. And then the second time I reached out was like 8 months later. And what I had done was I had gotten like 9 other people on my show that I knew he knew that were speaking at his event. And so it was like, when I reached out the second time, it was like, hey, I've already had your wife. I had Elena on. It was like, I had Elena. I had Bradley. I had Ed Mylett. I had Lori Harder, I had Carrie Kasem, I had all of these people that I knew were speaking at his event. And so when I reached out, I told him, I'm gonna be in Miami next week. Can we get this done, basically? And he was like, come see us, and sent me his assistant's, you know, number to set it up.
Yeah.
And then after that, I booked my flight to Miami because I was not going to be in Miami that week.
Yeah.
It was just a matter of like, can we make this happen? You know, like, I'm assuming that it's going to happen because now I have enough credibility because I interviewed enough people that he already knew.
This is a matter of time.
Yeah.
Like you said earlier.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So.
Man, this has been great, man. Like, you've given so much value. You know, I've gotten a lot from it. I know the viewers and listeners have gotten a lot from it, too. Is there anything you want to leave people with? Obviously, you know, we can, you know, talk about guest or anything like that, but is there anything you want to let people know? And obviously, how can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, if you're looking to get booked on more podcasts or you're trying to get better guests on your show, then you can hit up Guestio. You can shoot me an email, travis@guestio.com. And then Instagram, I spend a lot of time over there, Travis Chappell, at Travis Chappell over on Instagram. So hit me up over there and I'll see you somewhere.
Cool, man. Listen, I appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
For another episode of On the Pursuit Podcast. If you're in the Vegas area, definitely I'll pull up, hit up my guy Travis, man, and I will see you guys on another episode. Peace.